This is the Negative Splits Podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Negative Splits Podcast. And guess who's back? Shady's back. Glenn's back for this interview, right? Two episodes off. Cold is almost gone, but I'm back. I'm joined by my brother, Bill. Bill, what's up, man?
Not much. What's going on? Excited to talk to Tim Frerichs today. What are you up to?
Dude, I'm excited too. Last year, we got the North Face winner in Zach Miller. He had an epic battle with Hayden Hawks, and this year we get Tim, who also battled. The same two dudes were right there on top again, and I think early on they kind of pushed each other, so it'll be a cool interview. Let's get right to it. Right now, we're fortunate enough to be joined by Hoka One One Elite Athlete, North Face 50 winner, Transvolcania winner of 2017. This dude's on fire, man. What is he, a Coconino Cowboy? Tim Frerichs. Tim, what's up, my friend?
Hey, not much, Glenn. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Don't shortchange him. He won the Ultra Sky Race in Flagstaff this year. He's got the rim-to-rim, fastest known time, and Time Magazine even wrote a piece on the guy. Come on now.
Man.
Yeah, it's been an exciting fall. The rim-to-rim was a really special day, and I can't believe like the amount of coverage it's gotten. The Associated Press did an interview, and then it ended up like in newspaper. I had friends texting me out of like Salt Lake and stuff saying it made their newspaper. So like, yeah, that was a pretty special experience.
All right, so you're coming off a big win at the North Face 50. I mean, maybe we should start there because that capped off this incredible year you've had. How was that experience knowing that the field was going to, you know, represent some of the best ultra runners in the sport today? You got a big prize pool on the line and a lot of attention coming your way, but kind of as the dark horse because you had some big names competing there this year and two guys slugging it out again, Hayden Hawks and Zach Miller. How did it feel going into the race from your standpoint?
Yeah, for sure. I tried not to put too much pressure on myself with this one. Like I definitely went into it feeling like the underdog. I mean, Zach had won the last 2 years and Hayden put forth such a strong effort last year when he went against Zach. And, so I knew like I definitely wasn't like the favorite by any means. And, I'd had a really fun and, I consider it to be a productive fall before that with the Sky Race and the Rim to Rim. And so this was just kind of like the icing on the cake for me. Like it kind of what I've been pointing to throughout the fall. But I didn't expect like those other efforts to go as well as they did. And so, yeah, this kind of just turned into the cherry on top and like it just couldn't have been a better day. It was one of those kind of magical days that we're all chasing. Yeah, everything was just clicking and it came together. But yeah, there were some nerves, but tried to go into it relaxed, and I felt like I was on race morning.
Did you get to run your race that race? Because Zach Miller is notorious for going out there and kind of, you know, if you're going to stick with me, stick with me. If not, I'm going to try to go for it. Yeah, did you feel pressure to kind of hang with him early, or was that your pace? Did you feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, no, I felt like I really did do a good job at North Face of kind of balancing – like running my own race with not letting the competition go or get too far ahead. Early on, I was able to kind of let Zach get ahead. He was bombing. I mean, the guy like shot off the starting line like he shot out of a cannon, which is awesome. Like I have so much respect for Zach after watching the way he ran in North Face and just how aggressive he was. It was awesome to like witness that firsthand. But I do feel like I let him go on the downhills in particular. I felt like I was moving really well on the downhills later in the race, but I wanted to make sure I could do that later. So I really felt like I was holding back on the downhills and kind of spotted him some time early on, like coming into Tennessee Valley on the first go around. But I felt like I was climbing really well all day. And so the guys came back on the uphills and really just tried to kind of not let anyone go too far ahead, but I did feel like I was running within myself and just kind of running my own pace in my own race.
Dude, you won by 16 minutes. It wasn't close in one of the most competitive fields I've seen in quite some time. At what point did you open up the gap?
I tried to start pressing out of Stinson Beach. Like I remember thinking to myself, like, this is really cool coming down the switchbacks. It's really, I mean, to me, from my perspective, felt like we were really kind of feeding off each other, using that energy and momentum to really run a solid pace. But coming out of Stinson Beach, I stopped at the aid station there. And like, it was the only time during the race that I actually came like a full stop. I just stopped, took a couple steps, like slammed some water, because I'd been drinking like a drink mix throughout the race. But yeah, coming out of Stinson Beach, I really felt like I needed to start pressing, and I was feeling good on that uphill coming out of the beach. And I don't know, the gap kind of just opened up naturally from there. I was trying not to like really like go full bore at that point. I was still kind of trying to keep some in the tank, just because it's like we were mile 27, 28 at that point, and wanted to leave a little bit for late in the race. But yeah, I started pressing there, and coming off a cardiac down into Muir Woods, I really felt like I was like in my element, and I think that was kind of where I was able to pull away a little more.
Now, do you think this win sheds that underdog title? Because going into Transvolcania, a lot of people didn't know who you were. Now, if you look back, and we'll get more in depth into your high school and collegiate career, you have a lot of talent, but a lot of people didn't know who you were going into that race, or at least the mainstream followers of ultra racing. Then you mentioned, like, I'm an underdog in here. But I will say one thing. On our Facebook group, we put up who would win the North Face 50, and we had two people that said Tim Frericks, and one was David Roach, who's one of the better coaches, and the other one was Corey Waltering, who's also an ultra runner, who's pretty dang fast on his own. So do you think now, like going into 2018, you're going to have more of a target on your back?
I mean, I think a little bit, but I'm still relatively new in this. I mean, I've been running for years and years, but I think I'm still a little bit new in the sport of ultra running. So I think anytime you see success, there's a little more of a target on your back. I try to keep this an underdog mentality, but you know, the more success you have, it's harder to keep that. But like having a target on your back is sweet too. You know, it's like, I think a little bit of pressure can really create good results. So I don't know, into 2018, the gym is in my head is still the favorite for, any ultra race we line up together in. We both want to run Western States. And so, you know, I'm not on his level as far as high profile wins and that sort of thing yet. And there's a lot of good ultra runners in the sport that I haven't even raced yet. So, but yeah, I think with success, you see a little bit more of that target on your back, and it's something I'm trying to embrace. I think running with that kind of pressure can really create good results.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned him. That's someone I wanted to bring up. Of course, seems like he's played a big role in your development here in the ultra running world. And, you know, I didn't know this, but last year you ran Lake Sonoma as like one of your first big ultras and finished in second place to Jim.
Yeah.
In that race. And then, I mean, that's a heck of a way to kind of kick off your career. But then this year, you guys run the canyon so much. And you, like we talked about earlier, you got the fastest known time on the rim to rim. And it's just funny. It just seems like I'm waiting for now the big clash to happen. Maybe it'll happen in 2018 where you guys get a chance to line up again, you know, of course, as friends and Coconino Cowboys. But it would be interesting to see, of course, if Western States played out, because you have actually not too far from now 100K in the schedule, huh?
Yeah. I Western States, like, I hope we're both there. I mean, that's the big goal for a lot of the guys that I train with is Western States this year. But yeah. I mean, qualifying is a big task too. You know, you got to be top two at some of these more competitive ultras. So I'm racing Black Canyon in February, or at least that's the goal right now. We'll kind of see how my work schedule shakes out. I was signing up for shifts the other day, but something in February for sure. Maybe Sean O'Brien at Black Canyon doesn't work out, but I want to do it earlier rather than later and just get it done with and know that I'm in States for sure. Training with Jim has been huge for me. He's been in the sport a couple of years longer than I have and was kind of able to show me the ropes. Lake Sonoma was my first ultra ever, and it was such a fun trip. Like him, Jim, myself, and Cody Reed all road tripped up the coast and through Big Sur and just had a great time. Like went into Lake Sonoma, definitely a little bit under the radar, which is like an amazing way to run if you have the ability to take top two. So Yeah, that was a really fun trip and a great way to kick off my ultra career. Definitely faltered a little bit the next year with nursing school and a 12-month nursing program. But yeah, 2017, I feel really fortunate to have had a great year and kind of made up for the year that I had before that. So,
a lot of people might not know you're self-coached. You have been doing the sport of ultra for maybe a little over a year. Are you just scratching the surface of what your potential is?
I'd like to think so. We'll see though. I'm new to ultra running, but I've got a lot of miles under my belt, so to speak. I've been in track and field or running in one way or the other for several years. I competed at Northern Arizona University here in Flag and was a little bit burnt out after college and took a couple years off, but came back into the sport and it's been fun. It's like been kind of, you get thrown like on the improvement curve all over again. You start pretty low after not training seriously and for a while. And yeah, it's been fun to like, each race, each training block, you're getting better and haven't felt like I've really stagnated quite yet. I mean, I just know from being in the sport long enough that you go through ebbs and flows where you have a period where you're not really improving, but it's been fun so far. It's been fun to get faster each race. So
now, do you have any fear of burnout? Because you just mentioned that you did burn out after college. And I think your first 2 years, freshman and sophomore year, you had really good years. And then you had said that there were injury concerns and maybe possibly dealing with mono at one point, or there was some kind of illness.
Yeah.
And now
for sure,
with doing so well, are you concerned about that balance again? Because, with running, I think we all can agree, any runner can become obsessed with it to a degree. And with the success that you're getting now, are you worried that could lead to a potential burnout?
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that's always on my mind as far in regards to training and how hard I want to train. In college, like, we weren't sure what was going on. I didn't feel well and wasn't able to train at the level I wanted to. It might have been mono, it could have just been overtraining, but it was a really rough period for me. At the same time, I think it was a huge, huge learning process for me to kind of learn to let go of running and it'll come back when it comes back. But taking away from that, I feel that I'm a lot more cautious now than I was in college. In college, I had like a consistent training like I've never had before, really high mileage weeks and week after week after week. And now, especially with my job as a nurse, I feel like I'm able to kind of live a more balanced life than I was in college, where it was much more about, I was kind of one dimensional in the sense that like, you go to school as a student athlete to run and go to school. But for a lot of athletes, I think running is the top priority. And I was no different than that. So now it's like, I've got enough other things going on to where it's almost like self-limiting how much I can do. I work full time and, that keeps me from going crazy in training. I think I get enough in on the days I work and then I have 4 days off to do big days, which I use a couple of those days off to get in bigger long runs and then recover on the other couple. So I feel I'm happy with where I'm at, with training and recovery and, but yeah, it's something that's on my mind and it's something that I'm conscientious about and don't train too hard as a result.
Now, you've mentioned a few times, I was curious about your work schedule and how you make it work with, running and getting the mileage that you do get in. And I know Glenn's probably itching to ask this question because he's a fellow nurse himself, but I'm going to ask it. So what's your schedule like and how do you work around it?
Yeah. So I work 36 hours a week. Sometimes we'll have like an online training or an in-person training to where that's up to as high as 40. I try not to take any overtime as it is now, but yeah, it really, we're self-scheduling. So like every 6 weeks, a book comes out and we sign up for shifts. And so, it's actually been really working well so far. I've been able to schedule around race days. I work three 12-hour shifts. A lot of people like to do three in a row. For me with training, it's nice if I can do two in a row and then take maybe a day off and then work another. I'm working 12-hour shifts. And honestly, I'm handling that better than like the beginning of my nursing job that I have now. It was the critical care training program. And they start you off as like 8 to 5 Monday through Friday in a formal classroom environment. And that was tough. I mean, I've worked 8 to 5 in the past over the summers in college and, after I graduated for a little bit there. And, It's tough. I definitely prefer the 312s. It's the 12-hour days can be brutal sometimes, but I'm able to squeeze the training in on those days. I actually run commute to work now, which has been huge for me.
Nice.
But then 4 days off a week, I mean, career wise, it's hard to beat that as from a training standpoint.
So you're on your feet all day, 12-hour shifts.
Yeah.
You got to get that run in. Now, how do you do it in terms of, are you going easy on those days and saving the workouts for the other days, or are you pretty spent by then, or are you managing it pretty well?
Yeah, the workouts are definitely on other days, not on days at work. Those are sometimes it's hard because it's like I feel like I got to get recovery days in there. It's like, well, I'm running easy on my work days, but those aren't easy by any means. And then if I'm running hard on the 4 days, then that leaves too little time for recovery. So usually two, maybe three of those off days can be like bigger efforts. But yeah, for the most part, I feel like I'm managing it reasonably well. I mean, like you got a chart too, so there's time to sit. It's not like I'm behind a counter just standing for 12 hours. So that's a good thing. But yeah, so far I feel like I'm managing it well. I run to work, and then before, like trying to run after work after coming home, like as soon as my butt hits the chair, it's like getting back out is really tough. So if you run to work and you give yourself no other option, that's kind of been my like way to find a balance with that and make sure I'm getting out for the runs on the days that I work.
How long is this run commute?
It's only 4 miles, so it's not, lovely. It's not bad. But it's 4 miles. I mean, 4 and 4, 8 miles really isn't enough in my mind if when I'm training hard. So I only do 4 on the way there. It's less stressful. I don't have to wake up crazy, crazy early to do that. And then on my way home, I'll usually do like 8 to 10. I've gone as far as like 12, I think. And that's been a good balance for me. 4 is a nice distance though, cause it's like minimum I'm getting 8 miles on the day. And then if I want more, I'll add on after work and take the long way home. Sometimes I drop the pack off at work at home, which is helpful. But then some days it's like that gravitational pull of the apartment. It'll suck you in if you get too close. Sometimes I just forge ahead and run the whole hour with the pack on.
All right, nursing question. How good are you with IVs?
Oh, man.
It will make or break a nurse right there. If you can throw an IV in, you're pretty good. I've seen some good ones. Sure. I've seen some bad ones.
I feel like I'm a little above average, I think, right. At least right now. Hopefully that doesn't atrophy over time. I'm on day shift, so it can be crazy, just hectic at times. And we have a vascular access team that can do it for us if we're really in a pinch. But I try and do my own. And I when I was in school, I did my capstone in an emergency department. And I mean, the big takeaway from that was like IVs. I mean, there was a lot of other stuff, but I got to start a ton of IVs and feel like I kind of perfected the skill then, and try to keep it fresh and start a few of them when I'm working on my unit now too. So
all right, so if something happens to you in Arizona, go to Tim, man. That's the guy. You do not want no rookie poking you with those needles, man.
Yeah.
Now let's segue to Hayden Hawks. The reason I bring him up is because this is someone that you competed against in I think it's high school, right, or is it college?
College.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's competed in college, and then now the two biggest races of your career in the ultra scene, Transvolcania, he was the favorite going into it. That's who a lot of people were following, and he kind of had a rough day at the office. And then North Face, a lot of people, he was really sharp going into that race.
Yeah.
In college, how did the head-to-head matches go there?
Yeah, I mean, I love that guy. Hayden's awesome.
He's a boy.
Yeah, he's the most genuine guy out there. Like I've got a lot of respect for Hayden, as I do for Zach. I mean, both those guys at North Face, it was awesome to run with those guys for so many miles. But yeah, it's always fun. Jim and I are kind of the same way. I ran against him in high school. We were both in the mountain region in college, him being at Air Force and me at NAU. And Hayden's kind of similar in the sense that I ran against him a bunch in college. He had come back from, we're similar age, but he had come back from his mission. And so he's a couple of years behind me in school, but it was fun to watch him progress so much because he had come back from his mission and hadn't been able to do much running. And I felt like I was quite a bit ahead of him when he first came in and started competing against us. And by the end, it was like, oh man, Hayden's in the race. Like, you know, we got a train of NAU guys in this 10K, and then those SUU guys though are ready to throw down. So it was always somebody to watch for. I actually remember jogging around the indoor track in Pocatello, Idaho, and he came right up to us and cooled down with us. And just from that point on, it was like, man, this guy he's one of those guys that like you enjoy spending time with. I've trained with him in the Grand Canyon before, and yeah, it's always fun to go head to head with him. Though he's a big competitor, and you know he's always going to give it his best. And so at North Face, honestly, we kind of keyed off each other and worked together a little bit. He was another guy who we didn't get too caught up in the excitement at the beginning and in really bombing downhill. And it was like, I remember turning to him, I was like, "Hey, you know, I think this early, like, I'm going to save my legs and cruise the downhills and we'll catch them on the ups." And we agreed that we both felt really good on the climbs and kind of worked together those first like 10, 15 miles to climb well and keep everyone in on our radar. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun competing against him in college, and competing against him on some of the biggest stages in ultra running has been amazing.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see how he does 2018, especially after the big win at CCC. But
yeah,
did you compete against Jim as well on the track?
Yeah, I did. So we started competing against each other in high school, and it's funny how he's developed in the ultra athlete that he is now. And people are, I feel like, kind of wide eyed sometimes when they see Jim Walmsley, but like, that's how we were in high school. It was, he was like the guy, he was the man in Arizona distance running in high school. Like he really? Was kind of the first guy after Kenny. So Kenny Cormier won Foot Locker in I think 2004. And then there was kind of this gap, this lull in Arizona running where no one was really doing a whole lot. There were a few, like there were solid guys, but not competing on the national stage. And I felt like Jim was the first one to like, he trained like an animal, and like, and it showed. He, you know, he made Foot Locker Nationals and was kind of like the role model for a lot of us. You know, he's a little bit older than me. And me and my friends really looked up to him. We knew he trained really hard, and it was producing results for him. So he was kind of the model we wanted to follow. And then after high school, he went to Air Force and I went to NAU, and we're both in the mountain region and cross country. So I'd see him throughout college too at those mountain region championship meets. And yeah, competing alongside Jim has been awesome from 10 years ago to till here we are.
Now we've seen some finishes where people finish together. Are you a competitive person in a sense? Let's say you and Jim, Western States, mile 99, and yous are close to each other. What's the end there? Are you going for the kill, or would you settle for the holding hands and crossing?
Oh, no. Like we've actually talked about that because Cody Reed, one of our buddies, like I think he finished a race last year holding hands across the line, and we're like, man, I don't know about that. I think we're all competitors, and I think. If I were like trying to run down Jim at mile 99 of Western States, like I think I absolutely would, but it's only because like, I know that if he were in the same situation, you'd do the exact same thing.
Right.
And I mean, the chances of us being that close at that late in a race are so slim. Like 100 milers seem like it's just kind of this slow decay by the time you get to close to the finish, everyone's so spread out. But both Jim and I, like I'm not necessarily that competitive in training. Like I train really hard and I get in all the miles, but if I'm running with friends, it's like, I'm not out to prove myself. But on race day, I mean, it's all stops are out, and I'm a competitor on race day. So I think I'd be going for it.
If it makes you feel better, if I was in a 5K with my own brother, Bill, and we're close to each other, we wouldn't be close because Bill's a lot faster than me. I would trip his ass in a second. I would not only would I not pan, I would trip him just to ensure that there's no way he could surge back on me. So
That's awesome.
Let's talk about the 5K because a lot of our listeners, we have ultra listeners, we have people that are fans of the marathon. Now
let me take Tim back. April 11th, 2009.
All right. We're going back.
Yeah. Does that date mean anything to you? It was a big day in the history of Mingus Union High School.
April 11th, 2009. Oh, that was probably, Arcadia, the Arcadia invite. Yeah, that was a big day for me. Yeah, for
and
sure.
I apologize to Glenn for stepping over him, but I had this written down, so I had to get this in.
You tripped me. Absolutely. I was going towards the finish. You just cut me down.
Oh, that's great. Arcadia was huge for me. It was kind of the first time that like it was like concrete and apparent that like I can do this, I can compete on a national level, and had it in me to produce results like that. And then I spent a long time trying to replicate that, and I feel like I did kind of sporadically, but yeah, it kind of opened my eyes to what is possible for me, and that I can compete at a national level or with the best guys that I'm running against. And yeah, to go sub 9 minutes in the 3200 for a high schooler is something we're all shooting for. And like, I made two big jumps that season. I went from like 936 to 917 to 858. And so
yes.
It was, I mean, it was just a magical season for me. I was fried after Arcadia. Like I had trained really hard and wasn't the best at peaking and running well at the right time. I'm hoping that I've gotten that down a little better now, but in high school it was like, give it everything you got. And then by the end of the season, come like clawing your way into the finish line. But, to run sub 9 was really special. I'll remember that night for forever. Like I think I was second, and, but going for the win in a race like that, it wasn't a super stacked year. The next year was the year they had like 16, 17 guys go sub 9 and we had 3. But to be at the front of a race like that was really cool and eye-opening for me.
Yeah, and just to give the full context, you mentioned it once, but for everybody at home listening, it was in the 3,200 meters, and which is roughly 2 miles, and Tim ran it in 8:58. And wow, to do that at the time, he was only the sixth runner in Arizona history to run sub 9.
I couldn't do that on a bike, man.
I mean, was that a big moment for the high school too? Just
yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of, puts like a smaller, I guess we're not that small of a school, but we're in a small town. It pulls from a really large area. And to put like a school like that on the map, we had done really well in cross country before that, but to also like have somebody running faster times at the front was really cool. And it was a big day for Mingus. My high school, set the school record that day, and for a high school or any time you can like make your coaches proud, that's like what you live for. And yeah, I felt like my high school coach was just like so happy for me, and that meant the world to me.
Was sub 9 ever a goal, or did that just kind of evolve on its own? Like you said, your season, you were trickling down that time and 9:17 at one point. I mean, in your back of your mind, were you thinking, I want to go sub 9?
Yeah, I remember vaguely crossing my mind, but it just seemed like it was, after I ran 9:17, it was like, oh, maybe 9:90, sub 9:10 is possible. But it was definitely, I remember thinking like, man, if I could just like put together the dream race, maybe before this thing's over, I could run sub 9. But I don't know that I really thought it was possible. And to go out and do it was really special. I wouldn't say it was necessarily a goal. I'm like kind of a more like a logic driven person, and I dream big, but I don't, I also want to keep a handle on like what's possible. And so, it was a vague goal. It was like one of those, like you have tiers of goals, or at least I do, to where like, I'd love to hit this. I think I can hit this, and this is, I'm knocking right on this goal's door. So that was like the pinnacle for sure.
Now, growing up as a runner, a lot of people, like Prefontaine is like the idol, the running idol for a lot of kids on track. And did you have someone that you looked up to in the track world or the marathon world?
I remember like being pretty enamored with Ryan Hall around that time, yeah. Just because he was running like, African type times in the marathon, which was awesome. And so that was really cool for me though. Like Dathan Ritzenhain was my big role model. He was like the man for me. A big goal for me, more so than sub 9 minutes in the 3200, was making Foot Locker Nationals. And I never did. But I remember like when I first got into the sport, I went all in as like a student of the sport, just researching everything. And it was like, who is this guy who's won 2 Foot Locker National titles and like in course record times, and like just the way he ran, he never ran tactical. He just like shot off the line and went hard from the gun and won everything in sight. And like, he was a big role model for me. And I remember reading about how he trained and like, throwing ideas over to my coach, like, oh, can we try this or that? And he was kind of the driving force behind that and motivating me to try and, reach higher and set my goals higher. And I just loved the way he approached things mentally. It just seemed like he gave it all every time he lined up, which I thought was awesome as a high schooler.
I'm not sure if you saw this. It's resurfaced on Twitter recently. I've looked you up a few times on Twitter.
Nothing creepy about that.
Yeah. No luck though. I couldn't find you. So, but I don't know if you've seen the video that's popped up recently with Ritz and Ryan Hall when they competed back Do you recall that race where Ritz passed?
Oh, it's from like Foot Locker when they were both in high school. I think it was the one in Florida, like the big three. That was like this. Yeah. I haven't seen it on Twitter recently, but I know what you're talking about. I think Ritz ran like he blew those guys out of the water, which I thought was so cool. Cause it was like this really hyped up race where the three of them were like the big high school guys and they were all going to be at Foot Locker and going to be going for it. And then Ritz just, I think he won by like 20 seconds or something, which was like just awesome. And the way like the guy finishes, there was nothing like flashy about the way he finishes. He's just like, just gritting to the finish line, which I think is really awesome. And, or I mean, for me in high school, especially like seeing that level of effort coupled with that level of talent was just amazing to me.
Yeah, I would love to see, you know, Ritz is with the Hansen brothers now, I believe. I would love to see him put up, he's already done it, put up multiple great marathon times and performances. I mean, first American through to Boston the other year and what he's done at Chicago. I would love to see one more, if not multiple more performances in the marathon. And I bring this up because long term, you have a goal to run a fast time and, you know, qualify for the Olympic trials.
Yeah.
The marathon. Do you hope to do that? And now that the Olympic trials window is just opened up?
It's definitely a goal of mine. I've got some time, you know, it's still 2017, but it absolutely is. I don't know where I'm going to fit it in. I got all these races I want to do in the ultra world, but that's definitely a goal. I think it would be, I was talking about it with Caleb Hoover, a buddy of mine from NAU, and he's still running professionally. And like, we were just talking like, man, we could have like, realistically, like we could have 6 or 7 NAU guys like from our era on the starting line. And I think that would be really special. And I think 219 is attainable for me. I think it's getting in the right race. And, I would hope my goal would be faster than that for sure. Mm-hmm. But I would hope to get the qualifier, and running at the trials would be really special for me. It's something that I wanted to do the last cycle initially when I was in college and thinking ahead. And then come that time, I was just really kind of burned out and went a different direction in my life. But yeah, 2020, I'd love to be on the trials starting line.
I have a question because we're talking marathons. One of the hot topics are the Vapor Fly 4. Now, you're a Hoka One One elite athlete. Do you feel like there's, since you don't have use of that technology, is there a competitive disadvantage if you're not able to utilize that because you have to go with your sponsor? And
yeah, I know it's not
a big difference, but there is, I mean, it looks like clinically the data is showing that they're actually true to that claim.
Right. And I remember hearing that recently that there were some tests done that showed like significant improvements. My initial thought when it all came out is like, it was just like a bunch of hot air. And like, it's just, who knows? But yeah, it looks like the data does show that there's an advantage there. And like, and I think if that's reproducible and like in an experimental environment, like, then I think it's kind of clear cut that the shoe should just be banned. If you can reproduce that every time in a study that's actually valid, I think that's just the answer. It's not so much about like what I do to get the same benefit. I think it's more just like, well, if they're giving an unfair advantage, it should be allowed. So that's kind of how I felt on it. But I don't know. The like cynic in me is still kind of like, I don't know. I want to see the study that showed this, because I kind of think it's just more marketing stuff. But who knows? I mean, maybe it does give an advantage. So, I mean, yeah.
Let's give Hoka some love. What's your favorite model that you're running with Hoka? Because I'm a big fan of Hoka, being I think if you're a casual runner, I think they can benefit you. They're really easy on the joints. I mean, you get a lot of protection. What's your go-to sneaker with them?
Yeah, for sure. I remember first hearing about Hokas. My dad had a hip replacement, and Hokas were like the one shoe that he could get back out the door on. I thought that was pretty cool. But for me, I run into Speed Goats a lot. That's kind of my go-to trainer. It's got the Vibram sole and a ton of cushion. And like, I'm always trying to kind of improve my downhills. I feel like there's a little room of improvement for there. And so the cushion on them, it's like you can bomb downhill in these things and you're not going to lose traction at all. So that's my go-to. I really love the Speed Goats for like daily road runs. I'll run in the Cliftons. But yeah, I mean, those two shoes are my go-tos for sure, but I really like the Claytons and, gosh, what else have I been running in a lot lately? The Challenger's a great trail shoe too, but Speed Ghosts overall, I think, are my go-to for sure.
So going back to the marathon, what do you think? 215? You got any, man?
I don't know. Yeah. I think I would try it. Like in my first one, I think 215 would be an honest, a good goal for me, mm-hmm. is to try and break 215 or try and land as close as I can to 215. That's kind of what I'd be shooting for, I think. And just like looking at guys that have run around in ultras, I do think like there is a level of like, I think certain guys are better on the trails for sure. And I think I'm one of them that has done better on the trails respective to what I can do on the road. So there is a bit of that too, where I probably should adjust my marathon goals based on that. But I think 215 is a good starting point. And it's like, well, shoot, if I run 216 or 217, we know where like the starting point should be, but that's close enough to 215 where if you're shooting for 215, you're not going to totally explode if you run 216. So that's what I would shoot for initially in the first one, I think.
And interesting that you skipped right over the marathon into the ultra world. You didn't try to race one beforehand, huh?
Yeah, I think I fell in love with ultra trail running just because I was working full time in Flag and I had taken this break from competitive running. I was still training, but I fell in love with the trails just as like an outlet for me. I think it seems like a really common theme with a lot of ultra guys, honestly, is like, you know, life can get tough and running on the trails is really calming. It's a nice way to find solitude and clear your head. And that's kind of how it started for me, is like these long training runs by myself in the Grand Canyon and kind of re-experiencing a area, the state and the country that I had fallen in love with as a kid, and got out for these long training runs with no real purpose in mind. And then I remember kind of getting in decent shape just doing these solo canyon runs. And I was like, you know, I should hop in a race and see how it goes. And that's kind of where I bumped it. Like Jim and I ran in the Grand Canyon together, and like the Lake Sonoma idea was born. So that's kind of how I got my start on the trails.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I've been meaning to touch on this, the canyon. Someone that lives in Western New York, I've always heard about it, great things, and I see what you're doing on Strava, and I see the photos, and it just looks amazing. How unique is the experience, and was this something that you were able to immediately adjust to when you first started running it, or did it take a while to kind of get used to the many? I don't know. It just seems like a crazy place to run.
Oh no, for sure. Like I feel like our group, the Cowboys, owe a ton of our success to the canyon, because it's like, honestly, it's one of the tougher places to run that I've ever run in, and it's right in our backyard. And so there definitely is like a learning curve for it, though. I remember my first runs in the canyon, it was like I was working full time then too, and like I wouldn't be walking normal for like a week afterwards. Now feel like it's a little different. I can go and I feel, you know, the next day is always rough after big effort with that much climbing and descending, but I can definitely bounce back a lot quicker than I was when I was first getting into it. You hit the river and you look up at the rim and you got a mile climb, you know, mile vertical gain to go. It's like a 5,000 to 5,200 foot climb. So, it can be intimidating, but I think it, working those downhills really, really develops muscles that allow you to fly on the downhills, and then you do that first. And so the climb on the way out is really unique in that to get those big vert days, usually you got to go to the mountains. And so to hit the climb on when you're tired, I think really is a huge benefit physiologically as well as psychologically. Like having to go up with a big climb on your way out can be brutal. And the canyon's reduced me to walk several times because of it.
I mean, it's so damn big. Have you ever felt like almost intimidated or scared by it? Because I mean, have you seen any like wildlife that's freaked you out there?
Yeah, I've seen, not freaked me out. I think mountain lions would be the scariest thing that we have down there. They've generally, if you see them, they're pretty skittish, but you know, I know they've attacked people in the past. I had a family friend whose son got mauled by a mountain lion growing up. Jeez. So that's I think that's one thing you look out for. But generally, if you're in a really like remote area, they've got enough food that they're going to be scared if they see you and skittish enough to just run off. But But yeah, I've seen like rams, I've seen bighorn sheep, I've seen tons of snakes, ring-tailed cats, like all, and that's one of the special parts of it too, is you get in these remote areas of the canyon, you see a lot of wildlife and feel like, you know, you're connecting to it in a meaningful way. And, but yeah, scared, I don't know. I'm always worried I'm going to catch a toe. I knock on wood. I've never fallen in the Grand Canyon, but if you did in the right spot, it could be tragic for sure. So I think going in there, like I've never run with headphones in the canyon, anything like that. You try and minimize distractions and be polite and courteous of people hiking, so there's no hangups with that. And just paying attention to what you're doing. I've gotten lucky, and I'm sure it'll happen someday. But yeah, not just being aware of yourself when you're in kind of hairy areas with a lot of exposure is crucial, and not getting too caught up in like Strava splits and like trying to hammer the downhills, because that can, I mean, you know, people die in the Grand Canyon all the time. So I think you need to be careful. Yeah.
Now you have some good company that you keep when you run the canyon. Has that helped you raise your game as a runner, and how much so? I mean, you guys are going out there sometimes. It seems like you said earlier, it can be a friendly run, but I'm sure there's days where you're like, all right, let's go.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like Jim's great at like stirring that up in all of us. He's the one that'll like take off hammering, and it's like, well, I'm going to chase him. So, but yeah, I think it's really helped like elevate what we've been able to do in races. Cause it's like, we climb out the South Kaibab pretty frequently. And, that's kind of our gauge, I feel like, for where we are fitness wise, is we know exactly what it takes us to get out of the canyon. And, you know, like a good day where you're not walking at all is like around 80 minutes. If you can run the whole thing and you're pretty strong, you're looking more like mid 70s. And then like my fastest, I think, is 67. Jim is, or 67 or 68. And Jim's just a hair faster now, like a minute faster. So, yeah, it's kind of cool to know exactly where you're at as far as climbing goes. And that's just a great show of fitness, I feel like. So, can definitely measure up to your past levels of fitness with that climb.
We've mentioned Cody and Jim a couple times now.
Yeah.
How did the three of you connect?
So Jim and I connected just, I knew he was back in town trying to do the ultra trail thing. And I had kind of had these solo adventures in the canyon. So I don't remember who reached out to who, but we just got reconnected, and Jim and I started running together in the Grand Canyon. And I remember thinking like Cody was kind of going through a break, like he was taking a break in running, competitive running, himself. And I remember thinking like on one of these canyon runs with Jim, like, oh man, I think Cody would really love this. And I think he'd be good at it if he tried to compete in it. And so the three, like we just invited Cody out. I think we had had Jim and I definitely had a little more training under our belts when we invited him. And so that first canyon run together, we joke about a lot. Like Cody had the canyon wobble going on, like after the first descent, like 7 miles in, and it ended up being like over a 30-mile day. So Jim and I, you know, we laugh about dragging him down on that day, but I mean, it made us all really close. We've had a lot of great adventures for good and bad in the canyon. And, the three of us just kind of went from there. Cody and I forgot to mention this, backpedaling a little bit. Cody and I ran together in college. Like we ran against Jim on another team, but Cody and I had always like really enjoyed the trails when we were running at NAU and, just in training though. And that's kind of what made me think like, oh, I thought Cody always kind of wanted to get into this, and here Jim and I are doing it. So let's invite him. And the three of us just started adventuring on the weekends in the canyon and kind of took off from there.
How was that experience of getting the fastest known time rim to rim? Like talk us through it. Like just in general, how did that feel to accomplish that?
Yeah, that was just a really special day for me. I grew up backpacking in the Grand Canyon with my dad. We did a lot of backpacking trips down to Phantom Ranch and down like the Boucher and the Hermit Trails and a lot of the different areas of the park. And, I've gone back since and experienced them and training runs, and it's been awesome to do that. But to be able to like set a record like that, I think is special. It was really special for me. And, it kind of came about like it's been a vague goal of mine for a long time. I mean, the rim to rim to rim as well, like see how close I can get to Jim's record, maybe sneak under if I have a good day. But the single crossing is something that I felt like fit really well into like a normal block of training, just because it's not excessively long and it's a little more manageable like in a typical week. And so I had this vague goal that I wanted to do it. And then the Hoka innovation team was actually in town in like late September, early October when I did it. And I remember mentioning to Sonny with marketing at Hoka that, like, I think this is like a weekend. Like if we can get away, like, I think this would be the perfect time to do it. And she was on board, and a lot of the crew with the innovation team were excited about it. And we went from there. It was, I drove out to the North Rim that night and just slept under the stars, and then got my start early in the morning. I got to the river in the amount of time I wanted to take, because I knew exactly what it would take me to get from the river to the rim. And by the river, it was like, I knew just have a solid climb and you got it. And, to be able to do it though was really special.
Now, was nutrition a challenge when you, transitioned to the ultra world? Because that's kind of something that a lot of people struggle with initially, like figuring out what your body needs and what works for you. How did that go?
Yeah, I think I got to kind of like, I almost got like I had a cheat code on that one, just because Jim had done the ultra thing before I had for a couple of years. And so he'd kind of gone through the trials and errors of nutrition, and like, he just passed on a lot of great pointers to me. And so taking what he had learned and putting it with my own experiences in training, it's something that I would kind of practice with different types of fuel in training. That come race day, it really was like a really smooth transition. I was able to keep everything down, and that actually has gone really smooth for me. I haven't had any problems. I'm with Cliff Bar, and they've done, I really like their performance line a lot, and it's worked really well for me. And so I really have gotten really lucky, I feel like, on the nutrition side of things. I shoot for 400 calories an hour, and that's worked really well.
Better climber, better downhill runner, which one?
Better climber for sure. I think I think so. And I know like a lot of guys feel that way, but Jim keeps me on my toes on the downhills. Like he's good at both, but he can bomb downhill. And so I don't feel like I'm too shabby on the descents either, but I'm definitely like in races, it's like climbing is where I feel more confident than like, okay, I think they'll come back. Like, and I think that's honestly why I was successful at Transvolcanian, is there's so much climbing there, and you do it all early. And so it's like, be strong on the climbs and then hold on the downs, and you can be successful there. And so, I think I'm a better climber than descender for sure, but I'm always trying to work on my descent, and getting hammered in the ground by Jim Walmsley is a great way to do it.
Now, a lot of our listeners there, they do they're weekend warriors. We get a lot of half marathon runners, marathon runners. A lot of people love the 5K. Now, you have a little unfinished business with the 5K. Can you tell us what that is?
For sure. It was my fifth year at NAU, and I was coming back that track season, like not having competed seriously on the track in a while, and knew I was like really in great shape, and I just wish I caught a little bit better day. I remember feeling kind of lousy that day, and I ran 14:02, which I was reasonably happy with. It was a huge PR, but it's frustrating, because it's like, man, if I were like 13:59, and then really in the scheme of things, it's like the ultra trail scene has been so good to me and done a lot for me that the marathon is one thing, but to like jump all the way down to 5K is tough. I mean, I don't know that we're ever going to see any 13s in Tim's lifetime for him, but I don't know why I'm talking to the third person now, I would love to crack 14 minutes, but I just don't know when I'd ever have the opportunity to, running 14:02 is kind of a tough one to swallow for sure.
After the year you've had, you deserve to talk to that person every now and then.
No, it's just kind of weird, but yeah, I would someday if got like a lull in the race schedule, it'd be cool to like put the spikes back on and hit some quarter mile repeats and see if I can dip under, but we'll see. Probably not anytime soon.
What's interesting about that is you represent the new runner in the ultra world. I mean, so many fast guys are coming into the sport, and this is why so many CRs are going down, and all these amazing, race times are basically going down in every big race, it seems like. So how exciting is it to be at the forefront of that? And you're now no longer the dark horse, in my opinion. I think you're a guy to watch out for.
He's the man now going forward.
Yeah, it's been fun to be a part of. I think we are, you know, there's been surges in the past, but I think this one with what we're going through right now in ultra running is like, is really cool to be a part of. Like guys are, you know, like Hayden Hawks, for example, like going straight from a collegiate career on the track to like, you know, I'm going to run ultra trails. Like it's something I have an interest in and I'm good at. And I think I could see success there. And guys like that, I think are thinking that more and more often, like the world I came from, I know a lot of guys go, you know, do nothing but the ultra trail stuff from the get go. But, my experience with it from like a track and field perspective was, or a road racing perspective is like, it seemed like a lot of the guys kind of put their time in on the roads and accomplished what they wanted to there. And maybe were on the tail end of their career and then they give trails a shot. Which I don't, you know, I think it's a lot more exciting now that you got a lot of guys that are going straight for the trails and yeah, it's amazing to be a part of that. Like, kind of pushing what's possible and seeing how high we can set the bar, has been cool.
I mean, besides Western, possibly in 2018, I'd love to hear other destination races you have your eye on. But long term, what are some of your bucket list races?
Yeah, I would love, like, UTMB is a huge one. I don't think it'll, if I'm States is the big goal next year, I think it'd be kind of crazy to try and do UTMB in the same year.
Yeah.
I know guys do it and they do it successfully, but for me, I think that would be a lot. And like kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier with the burnout and stuff, it's like, don't know that doing both in the same year would set me up for success. But UTMB is one of those that is a bucket list for sure. Like after watching Jim's experience at Grand Raid, on Reunion Island, that's another one. Just the way Jim talks about that race is just like, you know, people talk about how crazy of course UTMB is and how tough it is. And then Jim is just like, Grand Raid is just on a completely different level. And so the way, you know, it has that allure to her whenever anyone is just like, this is so hard, you know, I think it attracts athletes for that reason alone. So that would be something I would love to do in the future. I mean, gosh, for now, like I Trans Gran Canaria maybe. Yeah, UTMB is like the big one. That's like the one that I really want to do. You know, it's like the pinnacle of our sport. And, that's one that I'll really want to shoot for maybe in 2019. And that'll be like the big one.
Past guest of ours, Camille Heron. What about what she did?
Comrades. I can't believe I didn't mention Comrades. Yeah. That's a big one.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, you know, I say UTMB is the pinnacle of the sport and it is for trail ultras, but I mean, Comrades has been like the race for a long time. And, Comrades would definitely be something I want to do. And I think I'd want to do it in an up year for me, just playing my strengths. But yeah, Comrades has kind of a long tradition, and that's ultimate. I mean, that would be a huge one for me. I'd love to do Comrades some year as well. Maybe I could swing that one and UTMB in the same year. But
there we go.
Those would be two good ones to shoot for. I think putting those in the same year could be a good thing.
I was hoping you were going to go third person there. Tim could do.
Tim could do it. No. Yeah.
This is weird. I don't do that like ever. So I don't know why I started talking like that. But yeah, that was weird.
Guilty pleasure song. If we grabbed your phone right now, you got a song on there, you'd be like, oh, crap, man. They're going to see this song. I'm a little embarrassed.
Oh, God. I don't know. I'm pretty just into like mellow folky type music these days. Embarrassing songs though. I mean, I don't know, like Justin Bieber, you hear him on the radio and it's like, I don't know, that's kind of catchy, but I don't know that it'd be on my phone. That would probably be the most embarrassing thing though, is like admitting that Justin Bieber is a little bit catchy at times.
Do you listen to much of music on the run or?
Not really. When I'm run commuting, I do. I like to listen to podcasts. I listen to a lot of Radiolab and stuff like that. But I'm not huge on running with headphones, especially like when I'm out on long trail runs. I do go without. But every once in a while, I think like I'm of the mind. Some people are like very firmly against running with music, and for me, it's like, you know, if you're grinding away at long big weeks in training, like whatever gets you out the door, like more power to you. And so, yeah, occasionally I'll listen to music on the run, but I try not to make like a habit out of it. Try to experience the trails and when I'm out there. So.
All right, one of the last questions I got for you. You get a shakeout run, so you're kind of taking it easy. Alive or dead, who's that person you're running with?
I would love to run with Bill Rogers. I think like the nice. Stories I've heard on the guy, like marathon he's man. A legend. You know, he's one of those guys that I look up to. Like he did it while working, and he ran some crazy fast times in marathons. And yeah, he's just one of those characters in the sport that I think you'd love to share a few miles with and just pick his brain. Like yeah. What was it like being part of like 1970s running? Sounds like a special time, and I'd love to chat him up about it.
Did you ever read his book, Marathon Man?
No, I haven't. And I need to. I know reading more just in general has been like on my list of like to do lately. I feel like life has been pretty crazy, but I'm starting to kind of settle into a rhythm. While I was in that classroom portion of school, I couldn't necessarily justify reading as much when I should be studying. So, and then nursing school before that. So now that I'm working and I'm training and like, you need downtime every once in a while and reading something I like to do. So I would love to read his book.
I have an ongoing top 10 favorite books of all time. And most of them are running books, but number one and number two are always Marathon Man by Bill Rogers and Eat and Run by Scott Jurek. Two of the best books I've read.
Okay.
But you got to check out the Bill Rogers ones just because you hear, I mean, he tells the story about basically what happened to him after college where he stopped running for a bit. And then, it was just a different time period with a lot of the, you know, stuff going around with war and just a lot of different political stuff going on that he was, you know, a part of. And but then here to hear about his training, it was insane. Just
that was like what it's like the stuff of legends. Like I remember like his training logs were online for sure you could still find them. But looking at his training logs, it's just insane. The guy there's these stories around like his diet and how terrible it was, but like the guy was running just insane miles. And it's like, I mean, like anything sounds good when you're running that kind of mileage. So, I've read Eat and Run, but I haven't read Marathon Man. I'd love to read it.
That was a great book by Jurek. I love that, man. What a story, you know, just about his upbringing too. What a tough upbringing, you know,
What
a warrior to win Western States that many times. There we go. Western States. We're coming back to it.
We'll be talking circle. To the winner of Western States next year. I don't need that be.
Man, it. I don't know. I don't know. That's a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure. But I mean, you know, you got to go into it hoping to win, I think. But there's so many good guys in the sport, and that course can chew you up and spit you out. So we'll see. It'll be a fun summer for sure.
Yeah, Tim, we appreciate the time, man. You've been very generous with us. You've given us an hour of your time, and I think you're kind of the reason I'm going to sound crazy when I say this, but I really believe the ultra marathon scene will eventually take over the marathon scene just because of the athletes. It's harder because you don't get the coverage that the mainstream people do, but someone like you, you know, anyone that's going to listen to this, they're going to say, like, well, you know, you're a lot more relatable than, you know, and it's not an insult on Galen Rupp, but like, someone that's so far removed from what, like, you know, a normal person, like, you know, you just don't hear from the guy. So it's like, I just think the ultra athletes in general, if you talk to a Michael Wardian or, you know, Jim Wamsley, we did have on a show, Fox. Like these are all just such nice guys. And I think, you know, it's hard not to root for all of you. So we wish you the best of luck 2018. I hope that you come back on the show, man.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me. And yeah, being part of the trail community is special for those reasons. It's like you can relate to people a lot more and people are very open and it's been really cool to be a part of that. So thanks so much for having me, though.
All right. And also buy Squirrel's Nut Butter. I know you're a Squirrel's Nut Butter athlete. They sponsor the show.
Chris, we love you. Chris is one of the best guys you will meet in your lifetime. So check Squirrel's Nut Butter out. It's an amazing product. And check them out.
All right. Well, thanks, Tim, for coming on, man. We really appreciate that. Now, Bill, we got a little business. You know, we always got to handle our business at the end here. Here's the big thing. Hit subscribe on that iTunes button. We won't know because iTunes did this thing where we can't really track our downloads from them anymore, but hey, whatever, right? Run, RUHN.co, one of the best compression gear companies out there. They got leggings now. They're awesome. They hooked us up with some jackets. Good stuff, man. Support them. They got 30, I think that they're celebrating their first birthday And then they're a company created by an ultra runner, and I think they're offering 30%. I don't know if it'll be available next week, but check them out. And of course, Squirrel's Nut Butter, they were our original sponsor, and they're still with us, very supportive. I think our code there is TNS20. But man, what a cool dude Tim is, huh?
Yeah, great guy. Hard. Oh man, every time we interview these guys, especially if it's someone who's coming on the show for the first time, it's just so cool to learn about their background. And like you said, as we were closing the show, it's just they're so relatable and so likable. And like, man, I'm gonna be rooting for this guy, you know, big time next year. He's a rising star in the sport. Exciting as hell. So
self-coached, man. Like, you think about that. Dude doesn't even have a coach. He's been doing it for a year. And he beat, I know Jim did it back to back, the rim to rim thing, but right. He beat it by 7 minutes. Like, this guy, I don't know. I think his dude could be the face of the sport going forward. He's a good looking guy, man. I didn't want to say it to his face to make him uncomfortable. I was like, man, that's a good looking dude. Like, this is not fair. Why is he so fast and good looking? Like, he should at least be like a little funky looking, right? If you're that fast.
Yeah.
Even an out god, make talent. Like, Justin Timberlake always drives me nuts, you know? The fucking guy can. You know, sing, dance. Yeah, does Trolls Act. Movie and, like, you know, kids like him. Not fair. But fair. It was good to be back for a show. I was off for 2 weeks, and Billy did an awesome job last week with Mario. That was an awesome interview. If you didn't listen to it, go back to that one. And we will see you next week. I think we'll have a pretty cool guest. And take care.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Negative Splits podcast. If you'd like to help the show, head over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or review. If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at negativesplitspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We're the Negative Splits. And if you're on Strava, why not step up to the challenge and join the Negative Splits podcast club?